Ball, counselor at law, and you, sir, are...
Inspector Franklin Jalbert, Kansas Bureau of Investigation.
He's gazing across the mostly deserted Manitou Main Street, seeming not to see Ball's outstretched hand.
Let's go inside. We have questions for Danny.
You go inside, Ball says, and we'll join you shortly. I'd like to have a private word with my client.
Jalbert frowns. We don't have all day. I'd like to get this done, and I'm sure Danny would, too.
Of course, but this is a serious matter, Ball says, still pleasant. If it takes all day, that's what it will take. I have a right to speak with my client before you question him. If you're with KBI, you know this. Be grateful, Inspector, that I'm willing to do it out here on the police station steps instead of taking him to my office on the back seat of my sled.
5 minutes, Jalbert says. Then to Danny, you're making it worse for yourself, son.
Oh, please, Ball says, pleasant as ever. Spare us the movie music.
Jalbert shows the pegs of his teeth in a momentary grin.
That's how he looks like inside all the time, Danny thinks. Once Jalbert's gone, Ball says,
he's quite the totter, isn't he?
Danny doesn't know the word and wonders briefly if Ball called Jalbert a tater, as in tater tot.
Well, he's something. Truth is, he scares me. Mostly because I didn't kill that girl, and he's sure I did.
Ball holds up his hand.
Whoa, no primary declarations. I called you my client, but you're not, at least as yet. My fee for this morning is $400. I should charge only two because I've forgotten most of what I once knew about criminal law, but it's Saturday morning and I'd really prefer to be on the golf course. Is the amount agreeable?
Fine, but I don't have my check. But
do you have a dollar?
Yes.
Good enough for a retainer. Fork it over.
And when Danny has done so,
now you're my client. Tell me exactly what happened and why Inspector Jalbert has it in for you, as he clearly does. Add nothing extraneous and leave nothing out that's going to come back to haunt you later.
Danny tells him about the dream. He tells him about going to Gunnell and finding the Texaco station. He tells him about the dog. He tells him about the hand and the trash barrel. This is all crazy time stuff, but the color doesn't rise in his cheeks until he tells Ball how stupid he was about the anonymous tip.
The way I look at it, that's actually in your favor, Ball says. You didn't know what you were doing. And wishing for anonymity, given how you came by your information, is completely understandable.
I should have studied it a little more, Danny says. I assumed, and you know what they say about...
Yes, yes, makes an ass out of you and me. An oldie but a goodie. Daniel, have you ever had a previous experience of a psychic nature?
No.
Think carefully. It certainly wouldn't hurt if there were prior...
No, just this. Ball sighs and rocks back and forth. He's wearing motorcycle boots and knee-high compression socks with his XL shorts, which Danny finds amusing.
All right, he says. It is what it is. Another oldie but goodie.
Ella Davis comes out.
Danny, if you don't want to make the 2-hour ride to Great Bend and answer our questions there, let's get this show on the road.
Ball smiles at her.
You are? Inspector Davis, KBI, and I'm losing my patience. So is Frank.
Well, we certainly don't want that, do we? Ball says.
And since your valuable time is also my client's valuable time, I'm sure Daniel will be happy to help you with your inquiries so he can get back to his Saturday.
22.
There's a rattling soft drink machine in the Manitou PD's break room. There's a counter with a coffee maker and a few pastries on it. The sign over the pastries says, Kick a Buck. On one wall is a plaque reading, We Serve and Protect. On another is a poster showing O.J. Simpson and Johnny Cochran. The caption reads, It don't mean shit if the glove doesn't fit. In the middle of the room, there's a table with two chairs on either side and a microphone in the middle. Between the drink machine and the pastry counter, a camera on a tripod blinks its red eye.
Jalbert spreads his hands at two of the chairs. Danny and his new lawyer take them. Ella Davis sits across from them and takes out a notebook.
Jalbert stands, for the time being at least. He gives the date, the time, and the names of those present. Then he gives Danny the Miranda warning again, asking if he understands his rights.
I do, Danny says.
Spoiler alert, inspectors. I'm mostly a real estate lawyer, Ball says. I do land. I work with a number of local banks. I coordinate buyers and sellers. I write contracts. I write the occasional will. I'm no Perry Mason or Saul Goodman. Just here to make sure you are respectful and open-minded.
Who is Saul Goodman? Jalbert asks. He sounds suspicious.
Ball sighs. TV show? Fictional character. Forget it. Ask your questions.
Jalbert says, speaking of respect, I want to tell you who deserves some. Yvonne Wicker. What she got instead was raped, stabbed repeatedly, and murdered.
Ball frowns for the first time. You are not prosecuting this case, sir. You are investigating it. Save the speeches and ask your questions so we can get out of here.
Jalbert shows his pegs again in what he may assume is a smile.
Just so you understand, Mr. Ball. Understand and remember. We're talking about the cold-blooded murder of a defenseless young woman.
Understood. Ball doesn't look cowed. At least Danny doesn't think so. But the pleasant smile is gone.
Jalbert nods to his partner.
Ella Davis says, How are you this morning, Danny?
Doing okay?
Danny thinks, So it's good cop and bad cop after all.
Other than everyone in Oak Grove thinking I'm in police trouble, I'm doing all right. You?
I'm fine.
They'll know what kind of trouble this is soon enough, won't they?
Not from us, she says. We don't talk about our cases until they're made.
But Becky will, Danny thinks. And once she tells Cynthia Babson, it'll go viral.
We'd like to have a peek at your phone, Davis says. Just a matter of routine. Would that be okay?
She's giving him direct eye contact and a smile.
Just a look at your locations could eliminate you from our inquiries. Save time for us and trouble for you.
Bad idea, Ball says to Danny. I think they need a special search warrant for your phone, or they would have taken it already.
Ignoring him, still wearing her best trust me smile, Davis says,
And you'd have to unlock it for us, of course. Apple is very touchy about the privacy issue.
Jalbert has retreated to the pastry counter, content to let the good cop carry the ball, at least for now. As he pours himself some coffee, he says,
It would go a long way toward establishing trust, Danny.
Danny almost says, You trust me about as far as you could throw this table, but keeps it to himself.
He doesn't need Ball, likable, but clearly out of his depth, to tell him the less he says, the better. Hostile comments won't help, no matter how much he'd like to make them.
He can tell the truth. That won't get him in trouble. Trying to explain the truth might.
Danny takes his phone out of his pocket and looks at it. 10:23 already. How the time flies when you're having fun, he thinks, and puts it away again.
I'm going to wait on that until we see how this goes.
We don't actually need a warrant, Jalbert says. Now that he has his coffee, he's retreated to the poster of O.J. and his lawyer.
Pretty sure that's bogus, Ball says. But I could phone a colleague to make sure. Want me to do that, inspectors?
I'm sure Danny will make the right call,
Davis says. The flint-eyed woman who came to Wilder High with Jalbert is gone. This woman is younger and prettier, projecting an I'm-on-your-side vibe. At least trying to, Danny thinks.
There's no event data recorder on your truck, she says. Do you know what that is?
Danny nods.
Darn thing doesn't even have a backup camera. When you put it in reverse, you actually have to turn around and look out the back window.
She nods.
So you'll have to help us with your travels over the last few weeks. Can you do that?
There's not much. I did go to see my brother in Boulder the weekend after school let out. I flew.
That would be the weekend of...
Jalbert is looking at his phone.
June 3rd and 4th.
That sounds right. He works at the Table Mesa King Supers.
He feels like saying more.
He's very proud of Stevie, but he leaves it at that.
Ernest,
Wide-eyed, still smiling, Ella Davis says, "Let's try to be exact, Danny. This is important." "Don't you think I know that?" he wants to say. "You're playing with my life here."
"I went on Friday afternoon, flew United, came back on Sunday. My flight to Great Bend left late, and I didn't get home until after midnight. So actually it was Monday morning by the time I was back in my own bed."
"Thank you. We'll check on that. Other trips?"
Danny thinks it over. "Drove up to Wichita to see my ex on a Sunday. That was before the dream." Jalbert snorts. Ball, looking at his own phone, says, "Could it have been the 11th of June?
Danny thinks, "Must have been. Otherwise I've just been here. Back and forth to school, trips to the store, picked up DJ at school a couple of times."
"DJ?"
Davis asks.
"Darla Jean. She's my friend Becky's daughter. Good kid." And he can't resist adding, "Thanks to you guys, I don't think I'll be seeing much of her for a while."
Davis ignores this.
"Just to be clear, you went to Wichita to visit your ex-wife, Marjorie Coughlin, on the 11th of June.
11, Jalbert says, and says it again, as if to be sure of it.
"Margie, yeah, but she's gone back to her birth name, Gervais. Said she got tired of cough, cough, Coughlin," he doesn't add. "Once you tell yourself not to spill your guts, it gets easier."
"Hey, you were arrested for stalking her, weren't you?" Davis says, as if just passing the time.
Ball stirs, but Danny puts a hand on his arm before he can say anything.
"No. I was arrested for violating the restraining order she took out and disturbing the peace. The charges were dropped by her."
"Okay, good. And now you get along."
Davis says this warmly, as if it's an accomplishment on the level of peace between Russia and Ukraine. Danny shrugs. "Better than the last year we were married. We had lunch that day and I fixed her turn signals. Fuse blew. So yes, we get along."
"Okay, this is good. This is good," Davis says, still warm and wide-eyed. "Now can you explain how Yvonne Wicker's fingerprints happened to be on the dashboard of your truck?"
Danny ponders the question and considers the fact that he's in an interrogation room instead of a jail cell. He gives Davis a smile and says, "Your nose is growing."
"You think you're very smart, don't you?" Jalbert says from in front of the poster.
Davis gives him a look. Jalbert shrugs and flicks his two fingers at her, meaning she should carry on. He says, apropos of nothing, at least that Danny can figure out,
1, 3, 6.
"What?"
"Nothing. Go on and tell your tale."
Slight emphasis on tale.
Davis says, "You have a little bit of a temper problem, don't you, Danny?"
"I used to drink. I stopped."
That isn't a very responsive answer.
She says it reproachfully.
"If we ask your ex, and we will, what will she say about your temper?"
"She'll say I had what you just called it, a temper problem. Past tense."
"Oh, all gone. Is that right?"
She waits. Danny says nothing.
"Did you ever knock her around?"
"No," then forces himself to add because it's the truth. "I grabbed her by the arm once, left a bruise. That was just before she kicked me out."
"Never by the neck?"
She smiles and leans forward, inviting confidence.
"Tell the truth and shame the devil."
"No."
"And you never raped her?"
"Hey, come on," Ball says. "Respect, remember?"
"I have to ask," Davis says. "The Wicker girl was raped."
"I never raped my wife," Danny says. Not for the first time, he's struck by a feeling of unreality and thinks, "I helped you guys. If not for me, that girl would still be a stray dog snack bar."
"When's the last time you went to Arkansas City?"
The change of direction feels like whiplash. "What? I've never been to Arkansas in my life."
"Arkansas City, Kansas, near the Oklahoma border."
"Never been there."
"No? Well, we can't check the EDR in your truck, can we? Because they weren't installed in Toyota Tundras for another year. But we could check on your phone, isn't that right?"
Danny repeats, Let's see how this goes.
How about Honeywell? That's also in Kent.
Danny shakes his head. I've heard of it, but never been there.
What about the gas and go where I-35 and SR-166 intersect? Ever been there?
I guess not to that particular one, but they're all pretty much the same, aren't they?
You guess? Come on, Danny. This is serious.
If that gas and go is in Honeywell, I've never been there.
She makes a note, then gives him a reproachful look. If we could just check your phone.
Danny's had enough of this. He takes it out of his pocket and slides it across the table. Jalbert steps forward and pounces on it, as if afraid Danny will change his mind. The passcode is 7813, and I'll have my IT guy check it when I get it back just to make sure you haven't added anything.
This is pure bluff. Danny doesn't have an IT guy.
We don't roll that way, Davis says.
Uh-huh, and you don't lie about fingerprints either.
He pauses. Or DNA from semen.
For a moment, Davis looks off her game. Then she leans forward again and gives him her, "You can tell me anything," smile. Let's talk about your dream, okay?
Danny says nothing.
Do you have these fantasies often?
Ball says, "Come on now. It wasn't a fantasy if the woman's body actually turned out to be there."
Another snort from Jalbert.
Well, you have to admit it's awfully convenient, Davis says.
Not for me, Danny says. Look where I am, woman.
Do you mind telling us about this dream again, Danny?
He tells them the dream. It's easy because it hasn't faded a bit. And although his trip out there was similar, there's no cross-contamination between the dream and the reality. The dream is its own thing, as real as the kick-a-buck sign above the pastries, as real as Jalbert's peculiar woolly widow's peak and avid yet lusterless eyes. When he's finished, Davis asks, for the official record, Danny assumes, since it's been asked before, if he's had previous psychic flashes. Danny says he has not. Jalbert sits down next to his partner. He drops Danny's phone in the pocket of his black coat.
Would you be willing to take a polygraph?
I guess so. I'd have to go to Great Bend for that, wouldn't I? So it would have to be after I finish work, and I'd have to get my truck back, of course.
Right now, cleaning windows and sweeping floors is the least of your worries, Jalbert says.
Are we done here? Ball says. I believe Mr. Coughlin has answered all your questions, and more politely than I would have done in his position. And he'll need his phone back, ASAP.
Just a few more, Davis says. We can check on your trip to Colorado, and your trip to Wichita, Danny. But that leaves a lot of time between the 1st and the 23rd, doesn't it?
Danny says, look at the locations on my phone. When I'm not home, it's usually in the glove compartment of my truck. The two boys I work with at the high school can tell you I was there every day from 7:30 to 4. That's a good amount of the time you want to know about.
Edgar Ball isn't a criminal lawyer, but he's not stupid. To Jalbert, he says, oh my, you don't know when she was killed, do you? Or even when she was grabbed?
Jalbert gives him a stony look. Color creeps into Ella's cheeks.
She says, that's not relevant to what we're discussing. We are trying to eliminate Danny as a suspect.
No, you're not, Ball says. You're trying to nail him, but you don't have a whole lot, do you? Not without a time of death.
Jalbert wanders back to the poster of O.J. and Johnny Cochran. Davis asks for the names of the boys Danny works with.
Pat Grady and Jesse Jackson, like the political guy from the 70s. Davis scribbles in her notebook.
Maybe your girlfriend can help us to nail down some of the times when...
She's my friend, not my girlfriend. At least she was. And stay away from DJ. She's just a kid.
Jalbert chuckles. You're in no position to give us orders.
Danny, listen to me, Davis says.
He points at her.
You know what? I'm starting to hate the sound of my first name coming out of your mouth.
We're not friends, Ella.
This time it's Ball putting his hand on Danny's arm.
Davis carries on as if Danny has said nothing. She's looking at him earnestly, the smile gone. You're carrying a weight. I can almost see it. That's why you're telling this story about a dream.
He says nothing.
It's awfully far out. You have to admit that. I mean, look at it from our point of view. I don't even think your lawyer believes it. Not for a minute.
Don't be so sure, Ball says. More things in heaven and earth than are dreamed of in your philosophy. Shakespeare. Bull crap, Jalbert says from the poster. Me.
Danny just holds the woman's gaze. Jalbert is a lost cause. Davis might not be, in spite of her hard shell. You feel remorse. I know you do. Putting that barrel over Yvonne's hand and arm so the dog couldn't get at her anymore. That was remorse.
He says nothing. But if she really believes that, she might be a lost cause too. It was compassion, not remorse. Compassion for a dead woman with a charm bracelet on her mutilated wrist. But Davis is on a roll, so let her roll.
We can help you take that weight off. It will be easy once you start. And there's a bonus. If you make a clean breast of it, we may be able to help you. Kansas has the death penalty and...
Hasn't been used in over 40 years, Ball says. Hickok and Smith, the ones Truman Capote wrote the book about, they were the last.
They might use it for the Wicker Girl, Davis persists. Danny thinks it's interesting that young woman has become girl.
But of course, that's what the prosecutor would call her. The girl. The defenseless girl.
But if you own up to what you did, the death penalty would almost certainly be off the table. Make it easier for us and for yourself. Tell us what really happened.
I did, Danny says. I had a dream. I went out to prove to myself a dream was all it was. But the girl was there. I called it in. You don't believe me. I understand that, but I'm telling the truth. Now let's cut the crap. Are you going to arrest me? Silence. Davis continues looking at him for a moment with that same warm earnestness. Then her face changes, becomes not cold, but blank, professional. She sits back and looks at Jalbert.
Not at this time, Jalbert says. His dusty eyes say, but soon, Danny, soon.
Danny stands up. His legs are like the legs in his dream, as if he doesn't own them and they might carry him anywhere. Ball stands up with him. They go to the door together. Danny thinks he must be a little unsteady on his feet or too pale because Ball still has his hand on his arm. All Danny wants is to get out of this room. But he turns back and looks at Davis. The man who killed that woman is still out there, he says. I'm talking to you, Inspector Davis, because it's no good talking to him. He's made his mind up. You talk a good game, but I'm not sure you've made up yours. Catch him, all right? Stop looking at me and look for the man who killed her before he does it again. He might see something on her face. He might not. Ball tugs his arm.
Come on, Danny. Let's go.
23.
When they're gone, Jalbert turns off the camera and the recorder. That was interesting. She nods. He peers into her face. Any doubts?
No.
Because a couple of times you look like he might actually be convincing you.
No doubts. He knew where she was because he put her there. That's the logic. The dream story is TV bullshit.
Jalbert takes Danny's phone from the pocket of his coat. He punches in the passcode, swipes through the various apps, then turns it off again.
We'll get this to forensics ASAP, and they'll go through the whole schmear. Not just his locations going back to June 1st. Emails, texts, photos, search history, clone it, get it back to him tomorrow or Monday.
Given the way he turned it over to us, I don't think we'll find much, Davis says. I didn't expect that.
He's a confident son of a buck, but he may have forgotten something. Just one single text could be enough.
Davis remembers Jalbert saying that same thing, or
close to it about one single hair in the cab of Coughlin's truck being enough. But they found nothing. She says, we'll just find the one trip out to Gunnell. You know that, right? His phone was back at his trailer when he killed her and when he buried her, both at the same time or separately. Count on it. Jalbert says, 4.
Pardon me?
Nothing. Just thinking out loud. We'll get him, Ella. That confidence of his. The arrogance will bring him down.
How serious were you about the polygraph?
Jalbert gives a humorless laugh. He's either a sociopath or an outright psychopath. Did you feel that?
She considers, then says, actually, I'm not sure I did.
I am sure. Seen his kind before. And 9 times out of 10, they can beat the poly, which would make it pointless.
They leave the room and walk down the hall. The young cop who brought Coughlin in asks them how it went. Turning the screws, Davis says.
Jalbert likes that and gives her a pat on the arm.
When they're outside, Davis digs her cigarettes out of her bag and offers them to Jalbert, who shakes his head but tells her to go ahead. The smoking lamp is lit. She flicks her Bic and takes a deep drag. The lawyer was right. We don't have much, do we?
Jalbert looks out over Main Street where not much is happening. Par for the course in Manitou. We will, Ella. Count on it. All else aside, he really does want to confess. You almost had him. He was wavering.
Davis doesn't think he was wavering at all, but doesn't say so.
Jalbert has been doing this for a long time, and she trusts his instincts over her own.
2 things continue to bother me, she says.
What?
How relieved he looked when you told him you had DNA from the doer, and how he smiled when I told him we had her fingerprints on the dashboard of his truck. He knew I was lying.
Jalbert runs a hand through what remains of his red and gray hair. He knew you were bluffing.
But the DNA thing, it was just so...
So what?
So immediate, like he thought he was off the hook.
He turns to her. Think about the dream, Ella. Did you believe that, for even a single second? She answers without hesitation.
No, he was lying. There was no dream.
He nods. Keep that centered in your thoughts, and you'll be fine. 24. Jalbert has a 5-room bachelor ranchette in Lawrence, almost within shouting distance of the home office in Kansas City, but he won't be going back there until Coughlin has been arrested, indicted, and bound over for trial. His boxy 2-bedroom suite in Lyons is close to both Manitou and Great Bend. Well, in Kansas terms, they're close. It's a big state, the 13th largest. Jalbert likes to keep track of such things. He stands at the window on Saturday evening, watching dusk turn to dark and thinking about the interrogation of Coughlin that morning. Ella did a fine job. Jalbert couldn't have done better himself, but it was unsatisfying just the same. He didn't expect Coughlin to lawyer up. He expected him to confess. Next time, he thinks, just have to keep grinding. He's good at grinding, but tonight he has nothing to grind on, nothing to do. He doesn't watch TV, he's run the chairs twice. He got a couple of hot pockets at the convenience store across the street and zapped them in the microwave. 3 minutes, 180 seconds, 1 to 18, added inclusively with 9 left over. Jalbert doesn't like leftover numbers, but sometimes you have to live with them. The hot pockets aren't particularly tasty, and Jalbert has an expense account, but he never even considers ordering from room service. What would be the point? Food is just body gasoline. He's never been married. He has no friends. He likes Davis, but she is and always will be an associate. He has no pets. Once as a child, he had a parakeet. But it died. He has no vices, unless masturbation counts, which he does once a week. The problem of Coughlin nags at him. He's like a fly that keeps avoiding the rolled-up newspaper. Jalbert decides to go to bed. He'll be up at 4, but that's all right. He likes the early hours. and he may wake with more clarity on the Coughlin problem. He undresses slowly, counting to 11 each time he takes off an item of clothing. 2 shoes, 2 socks, pants, shirt, undershirt. That makes 88. Not a good number. It's one favored by neo-fascists. He takes his suitcase out from under the bed, removes the gym shorts he sleeps in, and puts them on. That takes him up to 99. He sits in the desk chair to add one more, which takes him to 100. A good number, one you can depend on. He goes into the bathroom. There's no scale. He'll ask for one tomorrow. He brushes his teeth, counting strokes down from 17. He urinates, washes his hands, and kneels at the foot of his bed. He asks God to help him get justice for poor Miss Yvonne. Then he lies in the dark with his hands clasped on his narrow chest, waiting for sleep. "We don't have much," Ella said, and she was right. They know he did it, but the truck was clean, the trailer was clean, and he showed up with a lawyer. Not a very good one, but a lawyer is a lawyer. The phone may give them something, but given the way Coughlin handed it over. "Not at first," Jobber says. "He took time to think about it, didn't he? Making sure it was safe." Why the lawyer? Is it possible that Coughlin doesn't want to confess until he's had his 15 minutes of fame as the psychic who dreamed where the body was buried? That he wants publicity? "If that's what he wants, I'll see that he gets some," Jalbert says. And not long after that, sleep takes him. 25. For Danny, the week of the 4th of July is the week from hell. Pat Grady doesn't show up for work on Monday. Danny asks Jesse if Pat is sick. "No clue," Jesse says. "I work with him here, otherwise we don't hang. Maybe he thought because the 4th is tomorrow, we had today off too." This doesn't surprise Danny. Jesse Jackson is a young man on his way to somewhere. Pat Grady is a young man on his way to nowhere. Except maybe to the Manitou bars, once he's old enough to drink. There are quite a few. Danny visited all of them back in the day. Pat strolls in around 10, starts some story about having to help his dad, and Danny tells him he's fired. Pat stares at him, shocked. "You can't do that." Danny says, "I just did." Pat gives him an unbelieving look, cheeks flushing, the acne on his forehead flaring. Then he heads for the door. When he gets there, he whirls around and shouts, "Fuck you!" "Back at you," Danny says. Pat slams out. Danny turns and sees Jesse down by the doors to the gym rolling a mop bucket. He pauses long enough to give Danny a thumbs up, which makes Danny grin. Pat leaves the parking lot with the motor of his poor old abused Mustang screaming. He lays 40 feet of rubber. "That won't do your tires any good," Danny thinks, "but at least Pat Grady is one stone out of his shoe." When he gets home that evening, Jesse gives him a ride. His truck is parked outside his trailer. There are smears of fingerprint powder all over the cab and a lingering smell like ether, probably from the stuff they use to look for bloodstains. The keys are in the cup holder and his phone is on the passenger seat. On Tuesday, the glorious 4th, Danny sleeps in. While he's eating a late breakfast, he remembers he took his keys, but his phone is still in the truck. He gets it, mostly to see if he's gotten a text from Margie, something with fireworks, maybe? There's no happy 4th from her, and no emails, but he's got a voicemail from his lawyer asking Danny to call. Danny has a good idea what that's about. He wishes Ball a happy holiday. Ball wishes him one right back. "You're probably calling about your fee, but they didn't bring my truck back until yesterday." He's wryly aware that he sounds quite a lot like Pat. "I'll bring a check around to your office this afternoon." "That's not why I called. You made the paper." Danny frowns. "What are you talking about? The Belleville paper?" "Not the telescope. Plains Truth." Danny pushes away his cereal bowl. You mean that free handout? The one that's full of coupons? I never bother with it.
The very one. Sarah, my assistant, called me about it, so I picked one up with my morning donut. It's strictly advertiser-supported, so they can give it away free. Those ads must pay pretty well, because you can pick one up at every market, convenience store, feed store, and gas station across 4 counties. The content, such as it is, features local sports, right-wing editorials, and 2 or 3 pages of reader letters, mostly of the rant and rave variety. As far as news goes, they don't care what they print, which in the latest issue includes the dead woman's name.
They printed it?
Yep. Yvonne Wicker of Oklahoma City. And listen to this. Police received an anonymous tip which led them to the unfortunate young woman's shallow grave behind an abandoned building in Gunnell, a small town near the Nebraska border. A reliable source tells Plains Truth that the tipster has been identified as Daniel M. Coughlin, currently employed as a janitor at Wilder High School. He is said to be aiding KBI detectives with their hunt for the killer.
Danny is astounded. Can they do that? Release my name when I haven't been charged with anything?
It's not accepted newspaper practice, but Plains Truth ain't really a newspaper, just toilet reading. There's more. It goes on to say, when asked how Mr. Coughlin knew the location of the body, our source was mum. It doesn't tell readers to connect the dots, but it really doesn't have to, does it?
Jalbert, Danny says. The hand not holding his phone is curled into a fist.
Let's say I agree. Either him or Davis.
Not her. Him.
But try proving it. 6 cops in the Manitou station knew. They saw us come in. Plus the one who gave you a ride to the interrogation from your trailer park. And there's the people in your trailer park. They could have made a pretty good guess why the cops were there.
Sure. And Becky knew. He even told her about the dream. But still. He doesn't have enough to arrest me. So he does this.
Jumping to conclusions really won't help.
Come on, man. Did you see him? Hear him?
Ball sighs.
Danny, you need a lawyer who can advise you better than I can. A criminal lawyer.
I'll stick with you for the time being. Maybe this will blow over.
It might, I suppose.
Only 4 words, but they are enough to tell Danny that Ball thinks that is unlikely, maybe even absurd. 26. On Wednesday of the week from hell, Danny finds out he's going to lose his job. At noon, he goes out to his truck, planning to grab his dinner bucket and join Jesse at one of the picnic tables out back. He takes his phone out of the glove compartment, checks his emails, and immediately loses his appetite. He has 3. One is from the Belleville Telescope, and one is from Plains Truth, both asking for comment about his connection to the murder of Yvonne Wicker. The one from Plains Truth also asks him to confirm or deny reports that you were led to Ms. Wicker's burial site in a dream. He deletes both. The 3rd is from the Wilder County Superintendent of Schools. It informs him that due to budget cuts, his position as head custodian at Wilder High School has been eliminated. He's instructed to finish the week, but come Monday he'll be out of a job. Due to the regrettable suddenness of this reorganization, the email continues, your salary will continue to be paid through the month of July and the 1st week of August. If he has questions, he should get in touch with the assistant superintendent and county schools comptroller, Susan Eggers. There's a phone number and also a Zoom link. Danny reads this boilerplate fuck you over several times to make sure he understands. Then he tosses the phone back into the glove compartment and cuts through the gym to the picnic table.
Want some chili? Jesse asks. My ma always gives me too much. I heated it up in the mic.
I'll pass. I've got liverwurst and cheese.
Jesse wrinkles his nose, as if at a bad smell.
Also, Danny continues, I seem to have been fired.
Jesse puts down his plastic spoon.
Say what?
You heard me. Friday is my last day.
Why?
He pauses, then says, Is it about the girl?
You know about that, huh?
Everybody knows about it.
Of course they do, Danny thinks.
Well, they're not saying that, but they couldn't, could they? Since I didn't do anything but report a body. They're saying budget cuts. He expects more questions from Jesse about the body and how he found it. But Jesse may be the only person in Wilder or Republic County who isn't eager to know about his bad dream. Jesse has other concerns. And God bless him for it, Danny thinks.
Oh, man, we're supposed to put a coat of varnish on the gym floor. I can't do that by myself. I don't know how.
It's not rocket science. We'll do it tomorrow. The important thing is, once you start, you have to keep going. And wear a bandana or a COVID mask. We open all the windows, but it's still going to stink.
They can't leave me here alone.
Jesse almost bleats this.
I don't have any keys, and I don't want them. Jeez, Danny, I'm black. Something happens. Cleaning supplies disappear or stuff from the canteen. Who's going to get blamed?
I hear you, and I'll find out what the plan is, Danny says. I have a number to call. I'm going to take care of you if I can.
Can they do it? Can you, like, sue their asses?
I don't think so, Danny says. Kansas is an at-will state. What that means is that my employer doesn't need to provide just cause for my termination.
That's so unfair.
Danny smiles. For which of us?
Both of us, man. I mean, shit.
Danny says, could I still have some of that chili? 27. He doesn't call Susan Eggers that afternoon. He zooms her. He wants to look her in the face. But first he checks the Wilder County budget for last year and the current one. He finds what he expected. Eggers is a middle-aged woman with a helmet of gray hair, round gold-rimmed glasses, and a narrow face. An accountant's face, Danny thinks. She's at her desk. Behind her is a framed, jumbo-sized version of the Little House on the Prairie book jacket. Little girls in the back of a Conestoga wagon, both of them looking scared to death.
Mr. Coughlin, she says.
That's right. The man you just fired.
Eggers folds her hands and looks directly into her computer's camera lens.
Terminated, Mr. Coughlin. And although we didn't have to, we even gave you a valid reason.
Budget cuts, yes. But the county's school budget isn't smaller this year. It's actually 10% larger. I checked, to be sure. She gives him a tight little smile that says, O ye of little knowledge.
Inflation has outpaced our budget.
Danny says, Why don't we cut through this, Ms. Eggers? You didn't terminate me. You fired me. And the reason wasn't budgetary. It was because of rumors about a crime I didn't commit and haven't been charged with. Tell the goddamn truth.
Susan Eggers clearly isn't used to being talked to this way. Her cheeks flush and a vertical line grooves her previously smooth forehead.
Do you really want to go there? All right. I have been given some rather unpleasant information about you, Mr. Coughlin. Aside from your current situation, you were arrested for violating a restraining order after stalking your ex-wife. You were jailed in Wichita, I understand.
The jail part is true, but he was only in the cooler for a night and it was for being drunk and obstreperous. Saying this, however, won't help his case. Not that he has a case to make.
You've been talking to a man named Jalbert, haven't you? You or the superintendent? Inspector with KBI, wears a black coat and baggy jeans?
She doesn't answer, but she blinks. That's answer enough.
Mr. Coughlin, the school department has been more than generous with you, in my view. We are paying you through July for work.
And the first week of August, don't forget that.
Yes, through July and the first week of August for work you won't be doing. She hesitates, clearly debating the wisdom of going forward. But he's stung her. If he wants the goddamn truth, he can have it. Let us say, for the sake of discussion, that your current situation has played a part. Your name is in print in connection with a terrible crime. What would you do if it came to your attention that a high school custodian in your district, a man who is around teenage girls every school day, was an accused wife abuser and is now being questioned by the police about a rape and murder?
He could tell her that Margie never accused him of abuse. She just wanted him to stop yelling on her lawn at 2 a.m. Come on back, Margie, I'll change. He could tell her that he has no idea who killed Yvonne Wicker. He could tell her that he's morally sure the freebie rag got his name from Inspector Jalbert because Jalbert knew they'd have no qualms about publishing it. None of that is going to make a dime's worth of difference to this woman.
Are we done, Mr. Coughlin? Because I have work to do.
Not quite. Because you don't seem to have thought about what's going to happen at WHS once I'm gone. The, what do you call it? Ramifications? Who's going to replace me? I have one summer hire, a kid named Jesse Jackson. He's a good kid and an excellent worker, but he can't do the job by himself. For one thing, he doesn't know how. For another, he's only 17, too young to take on the responsibility. For a third, he'll be back in class full-time come September.
He will be let go as well, Eggers says. When you lock up on Friday, the key should be returned to the school principal, Mr. Coates. He lives right there in Manitou, I believe.
Does Jesse also get paid for July and the first week of August? Danny knows the answer to this question, but he wants to hear her say it. If he was hoping for embarrassment, he doesn't get it. What he gets is an indulgent smile.
I'm afraid not.
He needs that money. He's helping out at home.
I'm sure he'll find another job.
Like they're just lying around in Wilder County. She picks up a paper on her desk, studies it, puts it down.
I believe you had another boy, Patrick Grady. His parents have lodged a complaint. They called Mr. Coates and told him the boy quit because you threatened him.
For a moment, Danny is so amazed and infuriated, he can't even speak. Then he says, Pat Grady was fired for chronic tardiness and sloppy work. He wasn't threatened. He's just a common garden variety slacker. Jesse would tell you the same thing if you were to ask him, which I doubt you'll do.
There's hardly any need for that. It's just one more part of a picture that's less than handsome. A picture of your character, Mr. Coughlin. Be happy that we're letting you go for budgetary reasons. It will look better on your resume when you seek further employment. And now, as I'm rather busy,
the school is just going to stand empty for the rest of the summer? All else aside, Danny hates to think of that. WHS is a good old lady, and there's so much wear and tear in the course of a school year. It's July, and he's barely gotten started. And what about in the fall?
Not your concern, Eggers says. Thank you for calling, Mr. Coughlin. I hope your current problems work out. Goodbye.
Wait just a damn...
But there's no point, because Susan Eggers is gone.
28. Early on Thursday evening of the week from hell, Danny is in the Manitou IGA doing his weekly shopping. He likes to do this chore on Thursdays because for most working people, the eagle screams on Friday and the market isn't very busy. His own paycheck, one of his last 5 or 6, will go into Citizens National via direct deposit the following day. He also has a little over $3,000 put aside, combined savings and checking, which won't stretch very far. He doesn't pay
hellimony to his ex, but he sends her $50 or $60 every week or two. He owes her that just for the trouble he's caused her. He won't be able to do it much longer, and he dreads the call to her he'll have to make explaining his situation, although she probably knows already. Good news goes Pony Express. Bad news takes a jet. And he no longer has to support Stevie. Danny's younger brother is still living in the group home in Melody Heights, but he's probably bringing home more than Danny's weekly wage. Maybe he'll end up supporting me, Danny thinks. That would be a hoot. He's at the meat counter, trying to decide between a 1 or 2 pound package of ground chuck. It's the cheapest. When a loud voice behind him says,
Daniel Coughlin, need to ask you a few questions.
It's Jalbert. Of course it is. This evening he's exchanged his baggy black coat for a blue windbreaker with KBI on the left breast. Although Danny can't see the back of the windbreaker, he knows the same letters will be there, only bigger. Jalbert could have come up beside him and spoken in a normal tone, but he also could have chosen the parking lot. Other browsers along the meat counter are looking around, which is what Jalbert wants. I've already answered your questions. Danny drops a package of meat into his cart. 1 pound instead of 2. It's time to start economizing. If you want to ask more, I'll want my lawyer present.
You have that right,
Jalbert says in that same loud voice. Danny thinks the man's reddish woolly hair looks almost like an arrowhead or the business end of a rusty spear. The deep-set eyes stare at Danny the way they might stare at a new species of bug.
The right to an attorney. You'll have to wait at the police station until he gets there, though.
Same over-loud voice. People have begun to congregate at the head and foot of the meat aisle, some pushing their carts, some just gawking.
Or we can do it here. Your choice.
With everyone listening, Danny thinks, you'd like that, wouldn't you? Split the difference. Let's step outside. Danny doesn't give Jalbert a chance to object, just walks past him, restraining the urge to bump his shoulder on the way by, and heads for the door. It isn't as if the inspector can restrain him. Danny outweighs him by 50 or 60 pounds, and Jalbert once again isn't wearing a gun, just his badge clipped to his belt. Also his ID on a lanyard hung around his neck. Danny doesn't look to see if Jalbert is following him. The checkout women have stopped working their registers. Two of them he knows from the high school. He knows a lot of people from the high school because he's worked at WHS since leaving Wichita. As the outdoors slide apart to let him emerge into the warm Kansas night, it occurs to him that nobody he passed in the aisle said hello to him, although he recognized several of them, including a couple of teachers. Past the white light falling on the sidewalk from the front windows of the market, he turns to face Jalbert. You're hounding me.
I am pursuing my case. If anyone got hounded, it was poor Miss Yvonne. You hounded her to death, didn't you?
Recalling some TV show, Danny responds, asked and answered.
We've been through your phone. There are a great many gaps in the location log. I'll need you to explain each one, if you can.
No. Jalbert's brows, as woolly and tangled as his receding flow of hair, fly up. An odd thought comes to Danny. He may be hounding me, but maybe I'm returning the favor. Those circles under his eyes are deeper and darker, I think.
No. No. Don't you want to be eliminated as a suspect, Danny?
You don't want that. It's the last thing you want. He points at the bright yellow KBI on the breast of Jalbert's windbreaker. You might as well be wearing a billboard. Hey, have you lost weight? Jalbert does his best not to look surprised at this unexpected question, but Danny thinks he is. Wishful thinking? Maybe.
I need you to fill in those blank spots, Danny. As many as possible.
No.
Then you'll be seeing a lot of me. You know that, don't you?
How about a polygraph?
I've got my truck back and I'll be able to go just about any day next week since you saw to it I lost my job.
Jalbert shows the pegs that pass for his teeth. He must eat a lot of soft food.
Danny thinks.
It's interesting how people such as yourself, sociopaths, are able to blame all their misfortunes on others.
The polygraph, Inspector. What about the polygraph?
Jalbert waves one hand in front of his face as if shooing away a troublesome fly. Sociopaths almost always beat the poly. It's a proven fact.
Or it could be you're afraid it would show I'm telling the truth.
21,
Jalbert says.
What?
Nothing.
Are you all right?
It gives Danny great pleasure to ask this question. That's low, and it's mean, but he's just been embarrassed in front of his town. What used to be his town, anyway?
Jalbert says, you killed her.
I did not.
Come on. Own up to it. Take the weight, Danny. You'll feel better. It's just you and me here. I'm not wearing a wire, and you can deny it later.
Do it for me, and do it for yourself. Get it off your chest.
There's nothing to confess. I had a dream. I went to where she was buried. I told the police. That's all there is?
Jalbert laughs.
You're persistent, Danny. I'll give you that. But I am, too.
Here's an idea. If you think I did it, charge me. Arrest me.
Jalbert says nothing.
You can't, can you? I bet you've talked to the county attorney up in Wilder City and he's told you that you don't have enough. No forensic evidence. No video evidence. No witnesses. You've got an old man who saw me at that Texaco, but it was the same day I reported the body, so he can't help you. Basically, Inspector, you're fucked.
Which is funny, Danny reflects, because he is also fucked. Jalbert has seen to that.
Jalbert grins and points a finger at Danny.
The grin reminds him of the quarter moon in his dream.
You did it. I know it. You know it. 28.
Danny says, I'm going in and finish my shopping. You can follow me if you want. I can't stop you, and the damage is done. It was done when you leaked my name to that rag.
Jalbert doesn't deny it, and he doesn't follow Danny back into the IGA. His job is finished. Everyone looks at Danny as he shops. Some actually swerve their carts out of the way when they see him coming.
29. He goes home to his trailer in Oak Grove. He puts away his groceries. He allowed himself a box of Nabisco pinwheels, his favorite cookie, and intended to eat a couple while watching TV. Now, he doesn't want to watch TV. And he certainly doesn't want any cookies. If he tried to eat one, he thinks he'd choke on it. He's never felt so angry since being bullied by a bigger boy in middle school, and he's certainly never felt so cornered, he murmurs. Will he sleep tonight? Not unless he can calm down. And he wants to calm down, wants to get hold of himself. Jalbert looks like he hasn't been sleeping, and he'd like Danny to join him in that.
Get a little ragged, Danny, and do something stupid. Like to take a swing at me? Think how good it would make you feel. Try it.
Is there something he can do to take some of the pressure off? There might be. He gets out his wallet and thumbs through it. Each of the investigators has given him a card with their KBI numbers and extensions on the front, and their cell numbers on the back. Just in case he gets tired of his unbelievable dream story and decides to tell them what really happened, he puts Jalbert's card back in his wallet and calls Davis's cell. She answers on the first ring, her hello almost drowned out by what's going on near her or possibly around her. It's an off-key rendition of Happy Birthday sung by young voices.
Hello, Inspector Davis. It's Danny Coughlin.
There's a moment of silence from her end, as if she doesn't know how to respond to this 7 p.m. call from her prime suspect. He thinks he has blindsided her, as he was blindsided by Jalbert, which seems fair, at least in his current red-assed mood. The pause is long enough for Danny to hear, Happy birthday, dear Lori,
Happy birthday to you.
And then Davis is back. Give me a second. Then to the partygoers, Danny assumes it's a party.
I have to take this. The singing fades as she carries her unexpected call to somewhere quieter.
It's time enough for him to consider verbs. Talked? No. Interviewed? No, that's totally wrong. Questioned? Right, but also wrong. Then he has it.
How can I help you, Danny?
Half an hour ago, your partner ambushed me in the supermarket while I was doing my shopping.
Another pause. Then, we still have questions about your locations during those 3 weeks we're concerned with. I did speak to your brother and confirmed you were there on the first weekend in June. Is he on the spectrum?
Danny wants to ask if she upset Stevie. He's easily upset when he's out of his comfort zone, but he's not going to let her swerve him away from what he wants to tell her. Instead of that black sport jacket of his, he was wearing a windbreaker with KBI on the front and back. He didn't have a bullhorn and didn't need one. He was plenty loud. Not too many people shop on Thursday evening, but everyone who was there had a good listen and a good look.
Danny, you sound a bit paranoid.
Nothing paranoid about 30 people watching while you get rousted. I got him to follow me outside when I realized what he was up to. And you know what? There were no questions. Once we were on the sidewalk, it was the same refrain. Confess. You did it. You'll feel better.
You will, she says earnestly. You really will.
I called to ask you a couple of questions.
It's not my job to answer your questions, Danny. It's your job to answer mine.
But see, these aren't about the case, at least not directly. They're more of what I'd call a procedural nature. The first is this. Would you have come up to me in the IGA wearing your cop windbreaker and making sure everyone heard what you were asking? She doesn't reply. Come on, it's a simple question. Would you have embarrassed me in front of my neighbors?
This time her reply is immediate, low, and furious.
You did a lot more than embarrass Yvonne Wicker. You raped her. You killed her. What the hell happened to innocent till proven guilty, Inspector Davis? I only found her. But we've already been around that mulberry bush and has nothing to do with what I'm asking. Would you have done it the way Jalbert did, especially when he had absolutely nothing new to question me about? Danny can hear party people, very faint. The pause is quite long before she says,
Each investigator has his own techniques. That's your answer? She gives a short, exasperated laugh. I'm not on the stand. You don't get to cross-examine me. Since you have nothing substantive, I'm going to end this.
Does the name Peter Anderson mean anything to you? That's Anderson with two S's?
Why would it?
He's a writer for a freebie newspaper called Plains Truth. They printed Ms. Wicker's name. Is that usual procedure? Giving out the names of murder victims when their next of kin hasn't been notified? They were notified. At last, Ella Davis sounds flustered. Last week. But the telescope didn't have it. Or if they did, they didn't print it. Plains Truth did. And what about my name? They printed that, too. Is giving out the names of people who haven't been charged with a crime part of KBI procedure? More silence. Danny hears a faint pop. He thinks it might have been a birthday balloon.
Your name was printed. You're actually claiming that.
Pick up a copy and see for yourself. We know who leaked it, don't we? And we know why. He has nothing concrete, only a story he refuses to believe, can't believe, doesn't have enough imagination to believe. The same is true of you. But at least you didn't give my name to the only rag that would have run it. That's why I called you.
Danny, I...
She stops there before she can maybe say, apologize. Danny doesn't know that was the word on the tip of her tongue, but he's pretty sure. She rewinds.
Your name could have been leaked to that paper by any number of people. Very likely by one of your neighbors at the trailer park. Your idea that Frank Jalbert is persecuting you is absurd.
Is it?
Yes.
Let me tell you what I know about Plain's Truth, Danny says. I picked one up on my way home from work. It's my second to last day I've been let go. I have that to thank you for, too. She makes no reply. It's mostly ads with a few local news stories thrown in. Plus the crime stories. They love those. Anything from cow tipping to arson. It gets people to pick the damn thing up.
Danny, I really think this conversation has gone on long enough.
He plows ahead. There are no crusading reporters on the Plains Truth staff. They don't do investigations. Anderson and a couple of others sit on their asses and let the news come to them. In this case, Wicker's name and mine. Somebody picked up the phone and gave it to them.
If you're going to ask me to find out who did that, you're dreaming. Reporters protect their sources.
Danny laughs. Calling the guys who work for that rag reporters is like calling a remedial math kid Einstein. I think Peter Anderson will give you a name if he got one. Just push him a little. The way you pushed me. Silence. But she hasn't ended the call. He can still hear the party. Very faint. Is Lori her daughter? A niece? A name, not the name, Danny says. If Anderson even asked for one, Jalbert would have said he's with the Manitou PD or the Highway Patrol and hung up. A reputable paper wouldn't have published an anonymous tip without another source, but they did, and happy to do it. It was him, Inspector. I know it, and I think you know it too.
Goodbye, Danny. Don't call me again, unless you like to confess, that is.
Shot in the dark time. Has he been spouting random numbers? Not having to do with anything? Just off the cuff? Nothing. Don't want to talk about that. Okay. Wish the birthday girl, he begins, but she's gone.
He immediately calls Stevie in Boulder. His brother answers as he always does, sounding like a recorded voicemail message.
You have reached Stephen Albert Coughlin?
Hi, Stevie. It's...
I know, Stevie says, laughing. Danny, Danny, Bobanny, Banana, Fanny, Fofanny. How you doing, brother man?
That says everything Danny called to find out. Ella Davis didn't tell Stevie that his big brother was under suspicion of murder. She was... careful? Maybe more.
Maybe the word he's looking for is diplomatic. Danny doesn't want to like her. But he does a little bit for that. Stevie has his special ability, and he's developed, slowly, some social skills, but he's emotionally fragile.
I'm in good shape, Stevie. Did my friend Ella Davis call you?
Yes, the lady.
She said she was a police inspector and you were helping them with a case. Are you helping them with a case, Danny Bobanny?
Trying, he says. Then guides the conversation away. They talk about Nederland, where Stevie goes hiking on the weekends. They talk about a dance Stevie went to with his friend Janet and how they kissed three times after it was over while they were walking home. Someone is playing music loud and Stevie shouts at them to turn it down, which he never could have done as a teenager. Back then he would have simply struck himself in the side of the head until someone made him stop.
Danny says he has to go. His anger is mostly gone. Talking to Stevie does that.
Stevie says, okay, then says the usual,
ask me one.
Danny is ready.
Folger's special roast.
Stevie laughs. It's a beautiful, joyful sound.
When he's happy, he's really happy.
Aisle 5, top shelf on the right as you go toward the meat counter, price $12.09.
It's actually classic roast.
He lowers his voice confidentially.
Folger's special roast has been discontinued.
Good one, Stevie. I have to go.
Okay, Danny Bobanny. I love you.
I love you too.
He's glad it was Davis who talked to Stevie. The thought of Jalbert doing it,
of coming anywhere near his brother makes Danny feel cold to the bone. 30. Ella Davis puts her phone in the pocket of her slacks and goes back to the party. Her sister's doling out cake and ice cream to half a dozen little girls wearing party hats. Davis's daughter, birthday girl and star of tonight's show, keeps casting greedy eyes at the pile of presents on the sideboard. Lori is 8 today. The gifts will be opened soon and soon forgotten, except maybe for Adora, a doll that cost Davis 40 hard-earned bucks. The little girls, fueled by sugar and primed to party hardy, will play games in the living room, and their shrieks will fill her sister's house. By 8 o'clock, they'll be ready to fall asleep while the umpteenth showing of Frozen plays on the TV. "Who was that?" her sister asks. "Was it your case?" "Yes. One dish of ice cream has already been spilled. Mitzi, Regina's beagle, gets on that right away." "It wasn't him, was it?" Regina asks, whispering. "Coughlin?" Then,
"Use your fork, Olivia."
"No," Davis lies. "When are you going to arrest him?" "I don't know."
"Arrest who?"
a little girl bugles. Her name is Mary or Megan. Ella can't remember which.
"Arrest who?"
"Nobody," Regina says. "Mind your beeswax, Marin." "I don't know, Reg. That's above my pay grade." When the cake and ice cream have been served and the girls are eating, Davis excuses herself and goes out on the back porch for a cigarette. She's troubled by the idea that Frank approached Coughlin in the market, deliberately marking him out, saying to the witnesses to the confrontation, "This is him. This is the guy who did it. Get a good look." She's more troubled by the idea that Jalbert may have given Coughlin's name to the only publication that would run it. She doesn't want to believe he'd do that, and mostly she doesn't. But there can be no doubt that Frank has homed in on Coughlin. He's fixated. Wrong word, she tells herself. The right one is dedicated. She's most troubled by Coughlin himself. He did seem relieved when Frank said they had DNA and was happy to give a sample for comparison. He did know Davis was lying about the girl's fingerprints on the dashboard of his truck. But that could have been because he wiped them. It could also have been because Wicker, poor Miss Yvonne to Jalbert, was never in the cab at all. He could have wrapped her dead body in a tarpaulin and put it in back. If he got rid of the tarp, it would also explain why they found no hair, prints, or DNA in the truck bed. But why wouldn't he have buried her in the tarpaulin? Or it could have been because Yvonne Wicker was never in the truck at all. No, I don't accept that. Coughlin also offered to take a polygraph, almost begged to take one. Frank had shot that one down, and for good reasons, but... Her sister comes out. "Lori's opening her presents," she says, with the faintest etch of acid. "Do you care to join?" What the hell happened to innocent until proven guilty, Inspector Davis? "Yes," Ella says, putting out her cigarette. "Absolutely." Reggie takes her by the shoulders. "You look troubled, hon. Was it him?" Davis sighs. "Yes." "Proclaiming his innocence?" "Yes." "You'll feel better once he's locked up, won't you?" "Yes." Later, with the girls in their jammies and clustered on the living room floor, entranced as always when Elsa and Anna sing for the first time in forever, Ella asks Reggie if she's ever had a psychic experience, like a dream that came true. "Not me, but my friend Ida dreamed Horst was going to have a heart attack, and 2 weeks later he did."
"Really?"
"Yes."
"So you believe such things are possible?"
Reggie considers this.
"Well, I don't think Ida is a liar, but I'd believe it more if she'd told me about that dream before Horst had his heart attack. And it's not like he wasn't asking for one, fat as he is.
Look at your kiddo, Els. She loves that doll.
Lori is cradling auburn-haired Adora to her chest, and Davis suddenly has her own vision.
Danny Coughlin stabbing Yvonne Wicker again and again, and climbing on top of her in a cornfield and raping her even as she bled to death. They know it was a cornfield because there was corn silk in her hair. If he did that, he deserves everything Frank throws at him, she thinks.
And standing in the doorway next to her sister, she realizes it's the first time that deadly and disloyal, that too, two-letter word has entered her thinking. There's something else, too, and she's willing to admit, to herself, only to herself, that it was what really shook her. Has he?